And we're back once again with our latest and I think last Mission Impossible review until Fallout comes in a couple days. But until then, we got to go through a Rogue Nation. Welcome once again to Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I'm your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Also Mike here, playing with puppies, watching Mission Impossible, living the good life.
Did you follow this one?
Eventually, okay, upon all right. Third rewatch, which is embarrassing, but we had a weekend to brew over it, and the dog drove me nuts. The first two watches, like the first watch, I just looked up and saw Tom Cruise's face like wincing.
Of course, yes.
100 times. The second watch, I caught some of the dialogue, and
heard
I saw
explosions.
A few explosions.
Yeah.
And then the third watch, she was sleeping. And I lowered the volume. I already heard the sound before on the other watches, so now I could just focus on
visuals. You watched on mute with the closed captions on is what happened. This is a point I made to you that before we dive into this, that these Mission Impossible, when you do an impossible mission, you have to add so much to the plot to make the next mission more impossible.
A lot of qualifiers. You're writing yourself into many corners and then filling those corners with obstacles.
These scripts have to be just like pages of just scenery and setting and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
But yes, we're doing Mission Impossible Rogue Nation today.
Number five.
It is number five in the series. If you have not caught up yet, we have done each half-episode for a Mission Impossible entry into the series leading up to Mission Impossible Fallout, which is getting great reviews. We'll have that out. We plan on seeing it first showing opening night in a couple days, so we're going to get that out to you guys as soon as possible. But before we go there, we have to go through, like we said, 2015's Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. Tom Cruise is back in his Ethan Hunt role. Ving Rhames is back in the actual movie itself, doing things instead of just waiting until the end like he did in, the fourth?
Ghost Protocol.
Good God. So let's start it off. Let's get into some cast and crew stuff and some specs. Mike's going to start us off as he always does.
Mission Impossible 5 Rogue Nation, directed by mid-production Ghost Rider for Ghost Protocol, Christopher McQuarrie. He is the writer of The Usual Suspects, Edge of Tomorrow, and the upcoming Mission Impossible Fallout. He is the director of The Way of the Gun, Jack Reacher movies, Rogue Nation here, of course, and he's also directing Mission Impossible Fallout.
I wonder how much he has background with Tom Cruise. I mean, he's done a lot of stuff with Tom Cruise already, so I wonder where that comes from.
I think this is his fourth or fifth movie with him, so it's safe to say, Tom Cruise is a fan of where McQuarrie is taking the franchise. You got some continuity with production company Bad Robot, J.J. Abrams there. You got a lot of continuity with the director and the star, probably with the staff and the stunt team.
Right.
Wade Eastwood, no relation to Clint, unless he's a secret progeny.
Clint found out about him later on in life.
Sounds like a son of Clint Eastwood, though, right? Wade, like Dave Franco sounds like a fake brother of James Franco.
Does he not pass the level of like Scott Eastwood good looks? Yeah.
Anyway, so Tom Cruise has worked, I actually wrote this down, worked with Christopher McQuarrie now on six films, whether McQuarrie was writing or directing. Valkyrie and the Mummy are also in there. Writing credits for this baby go to Bruce Geller, father of Monica and Ross, the TV show.
That's the joke you made that I missed. Yes, very good. Thank you.
We just retook this whole thing because we thought it was Clint Eastwood's son for 10 minutes. We went on a 10-minute ramble on Clint Eastwood's fake son. Anyway, the director, Christopher McQuarrie.
Behind-the-scenes stuff, folks.
That's an awkward laugh if you couldn't catch my face on that one. Anyway, there's a story credit to Drew Pierce here. He's also written Iron Man 3 and this year's Hotel Artemis. So does this Christopher McQuarrie, work with you, Mike, that he was the writer of The Mummy? I didn't see The Mummy. I know that got shot upon. Are you a little worried for Fallout?
Yeah, I didn't see. Well, the whole Universal Dark Universe thing has its own bag of issues, but I didn't see The Mummy either. I was scared away by the critical reception. Tom Cruise needs a bounce back, right? And this is his signature role, as we said, he is quoted as saying. So I'm hopeful, and good Lord, the reviews for this. I mean, this sounds like a big deal.
We're hyped. We're like almost giddy. And Christopher McQuarrie, he's got a good track record here with Rogue Nation alone.
It's a surprising, and again, this is what Mission Impossible has done as a franchise. They've kind of turned to these directors for the first big budget, big time production for them and completely entrusted them with a property. You can't say it hasn't paid dividends throughout their universe. And this is another example of it.
Big money. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation stars a man who in 2010, for some bizarre reason, worked as a miscellaneous crewman in craft service on the short film Love in San Francisco. Now, either that is true or somebody on IMDb is lying. I kind of follow the trail a little bit on IMDb Pro, there's an article and a picture where the director of that short film entitles a photo, "The Day I Kidnapped Tom Cruise." So,
look at you doing a little investigative journalism. Well, here, all right, two things from that. First of all, good on you. That's a great nugget. And if you've been with us throughout this Mission Impossible series, Mike's kind of raised the bar as how he's going to introduce Tom Cruise each time. But secondly, we have one more movie to go. Technically, two more episodes. How are you going to do it? That's got to be the end.
I don't know. I don't know.
So stay tuned for that.
I may actually give him a real intro. I don't know.
All right, go ahead.
MI5. MI5 also stars Rebecca Ferguson as Ilsa Faust. That's a name that might as well be Femme Fatale.
Yeah. Little on the nose, but that's all right.
And you say it with an interrogative suggestion at the end. Anyway, Ferguson has also been in The Greatest Showman and Life. 24-Hour Party People and Harry Brown's Sean Harris is Solomon Lane. A lot of names in those titles. He's the weaselly-sounding villain that'll do voiceover narration of the Fallout trailers that we all know and love by now. I also think he's the first human being that talks entirely through his nostrils.
He is perfect for this role. I don't know if this is a character that he's worked on in the Solomon Lane, but oh my lord, is he a bad guy.
I've been trying to get an impression ready of him. I cannot
do
it.
This is impossible.
You just have to exhale the entire time. And again, you have to speak entirely through your nose.
Right.
And it's a rare talent.
Tailor made for him.
Jeremy Renner returns as William Brandt. Simon Pegg as Benji Dunn. Ving Rhames as Luther Stickell. Simon McBurney is Atlee. In the Loop's Tom Hollander. Veep's Tom Hollander is the Prime Minister of England.
That's where I've seen him. Veep. I knew his face was from. All right.
Jens Holten is the Bone Doctor. And Alec Baldwin is Jack Donaghy, because I don't care what his real name is in this.
No, that's fair. That's a fair assessment. Yes, that is
he's
Jack
Alan
Donaghy.
Hunley. So, yeah, that's the cast.
It was kind of rude of them to do Ethan Hunt and Alan Hunley, for those of us that need to take notes on these properties.
Alan sounds like the whitest name in the world.
Alan.
A couple production notes. Again, Bad Robot and Skydance Pictures come back to produce the film. So that's the third Mission Impossible in a row. We have continuity with the studios. Filming began in August 2014. The shoot globe-hopped once again Vienna, Monaco, several cities and locations in Morocco, and then several more shoots in and around London. Yes, that was Tom Cruise hanging outside that actual plane, doing it for real.
Stop. You're going to hurt yourself.
Without the use of a stunt double.
Oh, my God.
In the fields of Stamford, England.
It looked incredible.
Yes.
Right? It looked amazing as only a man hanging onto the side of an active jet can. But stop, Tom.
He's an insane person.
He really is.
And we love him for it.
Yeah.
For our viewing pleasure.
Keep doing it.
Cruise also trained himself to hold his breath for 3 minutes,
Yes.
Well, that's one way to say it.
Exactly correct.
If I'm Yoda. Which allowed him to perform the underwater sequence at Fawley Power Station in this movie continuously in one shot. This scene was designed to be in one take. However, with the CGI, eventually Christopher McQuarrie had to deliver Tom Cruise the bad news that they were going to have to interject some cuts into that scene.
Did they wake him up from his unconscious state first? Or
they have revived the robot.
Is he actually trying? Like, does he think this is his application to the CIA? How does he not get more recognition for this stuff?
We're going to find out in Confessions of a Dangerous Mind 2 that Tom Cruise has been in the CIA.
Except he hasn't been undercover. At all. Right. He's been pretty overt about this.
Hiding in plain sight. He's infiltrated Scientology for 50 years.
Step your game up, every other lead actor.
Now, I just want you to ask yourself this question. If you held your breath for 3 minutes acting throughout underwater, would you be ripping pissed that they took that one take beautiful, innovative thing
afterwards out of the chop
movie
it up
and then interject stupid Simon Pegg faces in there?
Me, as a mere human being, yes. Tom Cruise, who is apparently half cyborg, I don't think he has emotions, so it's probably fine.
Christopher McQuarrie's got to have something on him.
Well, he's worked with him enough.
Okay, so the score was done by Christopher McQuarrie. Movie composer Joe Kramer, so they went with a smaller name there, Way of the Gun. He's done a bunch of McQuarrie's movies.
Yeah, well, this is, again, it's kind of what they've done. They went Hans Zimmer at the start, then they had Michael Giacchino, I think was
Michael Giacchino did a couple.
Giacchino, sorry, was did the last two. So now we're kind of stepping down again. But this is what Mission Impossible's done.
In a, I think a record for the franchise, Paramount Pictures spent $42 million marketing this particular film.
Yeah, so that, well, I mean, they're the most famous actor in the world almost died, so you might as well make a couple bucks on
that into the budget or on top of the budget. I don't get budgets. And money's...
Don't have a checking account.
So, Mike, you got the specs?
I don't pay my bills on
you do
time.
The number things. I'll do the word things.
Yeah, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, some specs, also known as Mission Impossible 5. Written like Mike, also Mike said, Bruce Geller, who did the TV series, Christopher McQuarrie getting screenplay and story credits, Drew Pearce with a story credit as well, and McQuarrie also directed as he did both for Mission Impossible Fallout, like also Mike told you, which has an IMDb rating that I can't wait to tell you. I just checked it again. It's sustained its rating, but it has more votes. If this thing holds up, we're going to record our Fallout review in a couple days. If this thing holds up, you're going to be blown away because just you can't predict this.
And it's going to be Oscar worthy or in the it Oscar has to conversation. Be.
If this is the type of movie it is, it has to be. So we'll get to that as it comes. July 23rd, 2015 at the Vienna State Opera is when this had its worldwide premiere. It continued a trend of the series started previously of, hey, let us shoot here and we'll give you the worldwide debut showing of the final product. So
that's... Were there three snipers dueling
yes.
throughout
just
this premiere?
To make sure the aesthetics were right, yeah.
Just having a mock fight on top of the lighting.
It wasn't mock, it was Tom Cruise. He got actual agents. Yeah.
He needed to get his reps.
He doesn't act, quote unquote. He just does. Debuted worldwide in the U.S. July 31st of 2015 as well. 131-minute runtime on a PG-13 rating, produced by Skydance Productions, which is a Paramount production studio, TC Productions, and as also Mike said, J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot Pictures. Distributed, as all Mission Impossible movies have been and still are, by Paramount. Had a listed budget of $150 million, so we're back up to the $150 million threshold after having a step down for Ghost Protocol. And while it did finally get back to the point where the domestic gross covered the budget, we dipped back below the $200 million mark domestically. It only pulled in $195 million domestically, good for only the 11th highest domestic grossing film of 2015. But even that isn't bad news when you consider it only had the 14th biggest opening weekend domestic gross for any movie of 2015, too. So it kind of, again... Much like Ghost early. Protocol, people saw the movie. They kept coming for it. The theater average, which was down in a series low in Ghost Protocol, way up for this one. Bounced back in a big way as the movie opened to 3,900 plus theaters, which is 400 more than Mission Impossible 4 opened to. Averaged 14,000 per theater domestically, which is almost double the 8,500 per theater average of Mission Impossible 4.
That's huge.
We're back in the good graces. We've recovered from the stumble of Mission Impossible 2. People have appreciated Mission Impossible 3. They didn't really show up for Mission Impossible 4, but those that did kept coming back.
Yes.
Word spread. Here we are with Mission Impossible 5 making a shitload of money.
With the same team, essentially, making it.
Exactly. More good news. $487.7 million international gross means that its total box office was $682.7 million. Good for the 8th highest grossing film worldwide of 2015. Highest foreign grossing film of the series. How was it received by critics and audiences alike? A 7.4 IMDb rating, highest for the series so far, on 281,000 plus reviews. 93% certified fresh Rotten Tomato rating on 293 critic scores. 273 of them positive. It's tied with Mission Impossible 4 for the highest score in the series thus far, but had about 70 more reviews. Average critic score of 7.5 out of 10. 87% audience score, highest for the series so far, on 92,000 votes. 4.1 out of 5 average, 75 Metascore from Metacritic, highest for the series so far, and an A- cinema score. So this is the line, this is the new bar, it got raised here, apparently, with Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Awesome numbers. I got a couple award specs here. Won 2 Golden Trailers, a World Soundtrack Award, an International Film Music Critics Award, and a World Stunt Award for Hardest Hit. It was nominated for Outstanding Performance by a Stunt Ensemble at the Screen Actors Guild Awards. Now, this really pissed me off, Mike, because I realized that the Screen Actors Guild Awards started a Stunt Ensemble category in 2007. Ghost Protocol came out in like 2010.
Yes.
Was not nominated when Tom Cruise climbed the highest building in the world. And he's not nominated for that?
Well, of course.
Is that not good enough for you, Screen Actors Guild? Is the entire guild jealous of this man for doing all of his own stunts? Is he just putting them to shame and showing them up? That's what I'm guessing here. Because that just sounds like just horrible jealousy. No.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Anytime you do something historic, you should probably get recognized. I don't know. That's just how I feel, but...
Ugh.
Yeah, no, good point. How angry do you think the stunt awards are whenever they hear their Mission Impossible movies being made? Because don't they just have to assume that it's going to win?
Is he hated by the stunt guys? I wonder.
Yeah, maybe.
For putting him out of work, and then are the actors jealous of him for doing it?
I don't know. Whatever he's doing, it's working, so.
A lot of nominations for this movie as well. 3 Critics' Choice Award noms. Best Action Movie Actress, Action Movie Actor, Ferguson and Cruz. 2 Empire Award noms. 2 Academy of Sci-Fi Award noms. 3 from the Online Film and Television Critics Association. Again, Rebecca Ferguson factoring in there. Best Trailer and Best Stunt Coordination in there as well. So a lot of awards
really
for this
It's really
cool
one. To see the progression, too, of the wide acceptance of the series.
Right.
Mission Impossible 1 was embraced. 2, you could tell it hadn't made a lot of money, but people were disappointed by it. And now 3, 4, 5, you're getting more and more award nominations, and it's being taken more seriously critically, with, I guess, the ultimate goal of Fallout coming out, which we'll see how the awards handle that as well.
Yes. So to dive into some production values now, what do you think, Mike? Do you think these are the best yet? Or was the last movie a building too tall to climb in this instance?
You worked on that all week, didn't you? I loved them. I thought they were great. I couldn't really find anything that, certainly not with the visuals, that I had an issue with.
Now, I had strengths for this movie a little different than the strengths of Ghost Protocol. Ghost Protocol felt more like a James... No, it felt more like a...
See, I felt this one
location.
Was more of a James
Yeah,
Bond.
This one felt more like a James Bond, Spectre, New yeah. School James Bond. The last one felt more like the setting was emphasized.
I would agree with
like,
that.
The fist fights in this movie, the constant battles that these characters are having, the steady cam that they use for the close and brutal motorcycle chases, a lot of close-ups being just maximized for
and
their effect.
And with the close-ups and the camera tricks, it made it seem more personable. Between Solomon Lane and Ethan Hunt, the good guy, bad guy.
Ferguson, yeah.
Yeah, it seemed to be more head-on and more, especially with the way this movie ended, my God, couldn't get more personal than that, but I really bought into the conflict.
My only issue, and it's really after I finally got to focus on it today, the CGI in the underwater sequence wasn't wonderful, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah, I forgave it, because how impossible must that be?
It's good enough. It's better than we see most. I mean, it's better than Aquaman.
Which, listen to, we're going to have a trailer, a new Oscars trailer episode coming out next week, probably sometime. You're going to want to hear that.
So the movie looks great. It sounds great. It's ranked up there with all the others in terms
yeah,
of production.
Yeah, I would kind of dock the score. I think that's a credit to how great the Mission Impossible
really?
Good. I cannot remember Ghost Protocol, the words to save my life, so I'm just going to say Mission Impossible 4.
Sure.
But I thought Mission Impossible 4 did a great job, and we commented on it in that episode about working in, they're in India, so they worked in the sitars and the other Indian music for the theme. And this one, this score just kind of got lost. It just felt like a spy movie score, which is fine.
My ears are a wind tunnel.
Right.
The only time I actually paid attention to him was during the credits this time, because the dog's sleeping. And I'm just like, I can listen to a little bit. And I listened, and it was pleasant. And it was fun.
Right.
So that's where I'm
that's
at.
What I mean. I have no issues with it. It just didn't stand out to me this time.
So performance, and I get, a little bit of a character analysis here. Okay, so this is the Mission Impossible movie where Jeremy Renner doesn't do shit. The whole movie.
Yeah, he does less.
He does a lot less. Did he break both arms before this movie? Or was it not this movie?
He was hiding in his
and
game of
tag. He
was
just like, just running with a shoulder. So if they actually had him run, he was just his shoulders. They
had
to get prosthetic.
They kind of confined him to a corner in this one.
Yeah.
He had to be the figurehead to keep IMF going, which
we'll
get into in the plot.
Just the liaison between Alec Baldwin and that weird
British
man.
He's in a pissing contest the entire movie.
Yes.
So he doesn't really have a chance to join the action fun. He's got one scene where he's kind of in the field doing stuff.
Tom Cruise is incredible in terms of all the stunts, again. Incredible in terms of his action movie star capabilities here with all the fights.
Man. He's just, I hate him.
What an athlete.
so good.
The athletic feats of strength. Liam Neeson just pulls the water pipe down to him to escape. Tom Cruise, it has the pipe going from the floor up. Does that crazy gymnastic acrobatic
goes up
thing
and snaps necks.
Unbelievable.
And that's
the
another
torque
thing.
Of his kicks.
A lot of the hand-to-hand, last movie, Mission Impossible 3, we saw him kind of get into close quarter combat with the the government agent. Mission Impossible 4, he had some hand-in-hand. Mission Impossible 2, it was all Kung Fu, John Woo stuff. This one, there was a lot more choreography, I thought, as far as being out in the field and being in gunfights. Rebecca Ferguson has a big scene
at
the end.
She kicks ass.
Yeah. So I thought there was a lot of... That was really cool to see, and the action flowed very beautifully for me.
Loved it. What did you think of Solomon Lang? Where does he rank as a villain for you? Is his voice too inhaley? I mean, I think he should be narrating my next 10 audiobooks. I don't know if I want him to be my Mission Impossible villain. That's, I mean, I kind of like him, but
see,
I don't know.
I feel like if you're going to be the type of bad guy, the type of movie bad guy that's going to take things personally, but you're overmatched. You have to be overmatched by Ethan Hunt at this point.
Your mission should choose to
accept. That's exactly. That's a really good impression. But if you're going to be overmatched physically by Ethan Hunt, so you have to kind of be a weaselly, snivelly type guy, hands-offish guy, and that's certainly the impression that I get from him. I liked it.
I'm a little worried that, much like his fellow Scotsman there, I think Dom Hall Gleason is a Scotsman.
Is he
Force Awakens.
The son of Clint Eastwood, or
he might be. We don't know. The fact finding mission coming up. The Last Jedi had Dom Hall Gleason as like a comic relief character.
Yeah.
After The Force Awakens, where he was like the head of a fascist army. Are they putting Sean Harris's character in Fallout as somewhat of a goofy, put upon, I'm getting my butt kicked, I'm getting drowned in the trailers almost?
It wouldn't be the first time. That's how Simon Pegg, and that's another thing this movie I thought did beautifully. Simon Pegg just gets into the field in MI4.
Right.
And he's the comic relief. And you appreciate it. I thought it might have been a little too much. But now in this movie, Simon Pegg is more an agent. He actually does useful things and is able to stand on his own two feet as an agent. So maybe Dom Hall Gleason, his first big movie introduction, he's the comic relief.
I loved in this movie how Simon Pegg is the voice of unreason. And he's just like, oh, we've done so much harder than this before.
Yeah,
come on, man. Remember the Kremlin?
He's needling.
We can do this. You can do this. And you're the man.
That's another part of the performances I wanted to highlight is Tom Cruise does a lot of Jim Halperting to the camera in this one.
Okay.
A lot of like side eye glances and a lot of like, what the fuck am I doing type things. Like he gives all those one-off looks. And one of those is when Simon Pegg is like, oh, this is no problem. You can do this. No, and he just kind of stares at him. Like, I really thought that brought a level of authenticity to the Ethan Hunt character, because if you're going to do these movies and you're going to buy into the kayfabe of it, where you're in this actual universe and this is real life, at some point you have to take a step back and just be like, what else do I have to do? He has a super agent. How much more can I do to save this country? So I thought that was really clever to see.
Yes. So I wonder if that kind of takes trends downward on the Alec Baldwin character. I thought that was kind of a useless character in this movie, him and Jeremy Renner. Like, you can easily write those two characters out, is what I'm saying. I mean, I understand that they factor their way into the plot, but could you see, like, quickly and easily, write those suckers out. We don't need them.
Yeah, I don't think that's,
If they're not funny, if they're not able to do their own thing, then let's...
I think it's important for IMF to have an authority figure that actually has to answer for them, like the Nick Furies of the world. And
so
like
unfunny Alec Baldwin, that's the way to go.
I don't know if it's the way to go, but I think they need someone, so I understand where he's written in, but you're right. Does he serve any... The only purpose he serves in this one is another obstacle trying to hunt down Hunt.
Right. So I guess we'll move into Oscar lens now, Mike?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cinematography, very strong.
Very strong.
Visual effects, pretty darn strong.
I would agree.
With the script, I'm kind of just like, hurry up, get to the next action sequence already. But it's very clear.
I really like this script. Yeah. I really like the finale to it, too. I thought it was probably the most clever and the most painstaking of the Mission Impossible series yet.
I wrote this note when I watched it.
But on your first viewing.
Yeah. Like, come on, just get another explosion ready. Stop biting me, dog!
Yes, I love you too.
So yeah, maybe that's not accurate, but I did enjoy the through line a little more this morning, to be honest with you.
When you had a more complete,
So suffice it to say, I'm just not able to watch movies that closely.
At least not yet. You'll get back there.
If she's not asleep, so... I don't know if this is an Oscars movie. Could we put it up there for cinematography or visual effects? I mean, there's an argument to be made, but I don't quite know if it stands out necessarily.
Cinematography in 2016 awards was won by The Revenant. Ooh, Carol, which was great. Carol, The Hateful Eight, Mad Max Fury Road, and Sicario were the other strong year for cinematography.
Wow. Yeah. So no. Carol, this year. Maybe. No. Carol was pretty darn good cinematography, yeah. But it's great popcorn entertainment.
Visual effects, Ex Machina, Mad Max again, The Martian, The Revenant, Star Wars, The Force Awakens. Good God. Loaded year.
Loaded.
Yeah. So no, it probably wasn't making its way in on any of those. Screenplay that year was won by Spotlight, was the original Big Short adapted screenplay, Brooklyn for adapted, Carol, The Martian, Room. Now, strong year.
So now I made a big argument last episode about Tom Cruise for best actor after Gross Protocol.
Yes.
The porn version.
Let's just see if we can just not name it correctly throughout this episode.
Should we do it here? Because he strapped himself to the outside of a plane in England.
Well, who are you going to take out? DiCaprio for The Revenant. He finally got his win.
He was cold for 4 months. He deserved it.
Bryan Cranston for Trumbo. That could be. An argument could be made. Matt Damon for The Martian.
Matt Damon in The Martian is good. Is he great in that movie? I don't know. Maybe we'll have to do a retrospective.
It's a comedy, too. Did you hear that? It's
by the Golden Globes. Yeah. Tom Cruise is very breaking the fourth wall in this movie, though. I don't know if this is as strong as the last movie in terms of his performance.
Fassbender for Steve Jobs. Eddie Redmayne for The Danish Girl with the Last Dude.
Fassbender was great. Eddie Redmayne was good.
That was a great year for movies. 2016, yes, the 2016 year.
So what do you say, Mike? Into spoilers? Spoilers ahead!
Let's do some spoiler warnings. We're not going to do the big dance production. If you've been with us for the first four Mission Impossible half-episodes, we're actually on pace to keep this one as an actual half-episode. First time in five movies. Yeah, but we'll see how that goes. But we're not going to do a big spoiler warning dance breakdown like we usually do for our Oscar sprint profiles. This is your spoiler warning. We're going to get into the twists and turns of the plot. If you don't want to hear those, if you haven't seen the movie yet or you want to rewatch it, go back, hit pause here, go back, watch the movie, come back to us. If you want to find out the twists and turns, it's going to be all twists and turns and spoiler-filled from here on out. So let's get into it, Michael.
I have a Thor-sized plot summary for this one. Sorry.
All right. Plot overview. Let's go.
Ethan Hunt intercepts nerve gas being sold to Chechen terrorists by literally attaching himself to a plane.
See, you already got rid of the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Then he straps himself up to the nerve gas bundle,
yes,
which he parachutes out with himself attached to that out of the plane.
Amazed that wasn't actually what he did in real life.
Can you imagine these henchmen telling their boss what happened to that nerve gas?
No, I swear!
Tom Cruise attached himself to the plane door, or he must have attached himself to the door. He jimmied it open, I guess. And then perhaps he had a British tech guy. Wait. British tech guys are only accurate, and they're only helpful half the time.
Gunshot to the head.
I don't know how he got into the door, but something happened when we get to the door. But wait, was he a British comic relief tech guy? Because they're even less accurate. I don't know, boss. We don't know what was on the ground. But the boss is like, all right, well, I'm half likely to believe your story, though, bud. So then the boss is like, well, all right, fine. Well, boss, Tom Cruise then drops the supply door and put his arms through the nerve gas packaging, and then boom, he's gone. So, well, Henchman 44, they don't have names.
Of course,
henchmen.
Yes, of course.
I don't make the rules. You're dead.
I now see why you think this will go long.
Anyway, Hunt's IMF team, from their collected intelligence, they believe that there's an anti-IMF that they call the Syndicate because it's worth three more sequels. This anti-IMF, the Syndicate, is supplying terrorists with weapons. In that case, it was supposed to be nerve gas. CIA is denying its existence because Alec Baldwin is in the movie. But Hunt meets the man in glasses at a record shop. He thinks he's getting his next mission from the IMF guys. The head honcho's there, Alec Baldwin and such. Well, Alec Baldwin's kind of auxiliary. It's actually the Syndicate giving him that first message. I thought that was kind of
Solomon Lane himself. And that's such a... Again, I love when they're so innovative that they depart from their own conventions, which are departing from conventions. And we go down that spiral. But every Mission Impossible opening has been, this is your mission, this table to self-destruct. And this one's like, hey, it's me, the bad guy. I really like that.
And you can't get out of this, this glass box, and we're going to poison you.
Enjoy this nerve gas.
You're captured. Luckily, an undercover MI6 agent, Rebecca Ferguson, playing Ilsa Faust, stops Hunt from being tortured to death by the bone doctor.
Pussy galore was taken. That's why.
A lot of vagina. Alec Baldwin succeeds in disbanding the IMF after all this happens during Senate hearings, where Jeremy Renner just gives a standard response that is not funny. But Renner does warn Hunt to stay undercover, which Hunt sort of does by luring Benji, Simon Pegg's character, to help him divert an assassination attempt initially on the Austrian chancellor at an opera in Vienna.
Yes.
Three snipers are present. This is quite the choreography.
While the actual opera is going on below them.
Yes. And Benji actually gets a fight scene involved here. Rebecca Ferguson as Faust is one of those assassins, but we don't know if she's there to kill the other assassins or if she's actually there to kill the chancellor. We don't know what team she's on yet.
I'm going to stop you because I don't know how off base you're going to get, but you're doing a hell of a job keeping this succinct so far.
Oh, I always stop for a compliment.
Yeah, you really are.
Turns out she ends up helping Hunt.
I expect you to start speaking Mandarin and gibberish now, but go ahead.
Turns out she helps Hunt muck up the assassination and kill the other two assassins. Again, Peg is also there. He was supposed to just be the guy in the chair in the background. He actually gets hands dirty and goes into like the sound booth and fights one of the guys, which Ilsa Faust shoots.
Yeah, callback to Inglourious Basterds. Oh, yeah. There. I had a lot of flashbacks of that fight going on in the control room.
Kind of like that, with the big bougie, you know, overlapper right. thing and down and dirty savage fights. I loved when the tall assassin stands up next to Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Who's my height, 5'8", at least on paper.
Right. Not in the movies.
I'm also on paper 5'8". I'm really 5'7".
In the movies, Tom's like 6'2".
She runs off with Hunt, Ilsa Faust there, ditching him only after the Chancellor's car bomb goes off outside the opera. So
it was really a zero-sum game. There were assassins there to kill the Chancellor. Tom Cruise takes his shot, what he thinks is saving the Chancellor's life, only to watch him literally explode before his eyes anyway.
So they have a backup to the backup. They send two snipers plus a car bomb to kill the Chancellor.
Really wanted this guy dead.
Want that Chancellor dead. So Renner / Brandt recruits Luther because he's going to help Ethan on the sly, because Ethan is his friend because they spent a movie together.
Ving Rhames getting a little soliloquy here.
Simon Pegg sticks with him too after the opera. Now, I don't know if this was a wise idea for Hunt. I mean, this was his chance to kind of white fang Benji. I know that's a loaded statement of dog movies, but that is true. Like, he could have said, listen, no, you're going to be named a traitor. I got this one. Go back. And he's listened to him before, and Peg's like, no, I'm here. I'm here to give you tech that'll only work half the time. Don't worry.
He really hung up on this half the time
thing. Tom Cruise is just going to be like, okay, fine, if you give me the big dramatic speech. Oh, you're my friend, though. Oh, God damn it. And Cruise
well,
is like,
he can only trust one.
And that's when he shoots him.
Right, yes, of course. you have made it very clear that your wish is for Ethan Hunt to kill Benji.
Benji's even worse.
Multiple movies.
He's even worse in this movie, because then he's egging Cruise on later on. Anyway, this will be the fourth time in five movies Hunt's been disavowed. I actually think Hunt has quite the track record by now. Because three times when you're right and everybody else is wrong, including major intelligence agencies.
I had this exact same thought. What does it take for them just to stick by this man? He has always put the country before his own safety been right.
Hasn't he earned a little bit of the benefit of a doubt?
I had that exact same thought.
Okay, anyway, Peg and Hunt find Ilsa Faust and they all go swimming. In a giant circular tank, because...
Not exactly what happens, but all right.
This is what bad guys do to make it Tom Cruise-proof.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least they think they're making it Tom Cruise-proof. They put all their secret files in a giant circular tank with futuristic robot arms. Mm-hmm. To force where you can't have metal in there. You think they can wait like a day?
The
and
SIM
get
cards,
like a,
wouldn't they get water damage?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Can you make a plastic oxygen tank for me, please? I mean, Ving Rhames, can you put that on order? You order that on Amazon for me? Anyway, they go in there. And this, of course, Simon Pegg is like, oh, you've done better than this.
Right.
This is nothing. You can hold your breath for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever. Ilsa Faust has to save Hunt, which is just a harrowing sequence, even though the CGI is a little hit and miss, but a harrowing sequence, really great. After she revives Tom Cruise, she basically runs away with the data. Just runs away with it. And she meets up with a bunch of scary-looking dudes on motorcycles. Tom Cruise woozy. I love a woozy Tom Cruise. I love a hero who's kind of limping.
I like that it was true to life. If you hold your breath for that long and you're passed out underwater, you're going to have memory loss.
And the truth is, he did hold his breath for that long. What a lunatic. Him and Simon Pegg go after Ilsa Faust and all these motorcycle goons in a car, then on a motorcycle. Crazy-ass chase through Morocco, and I loved it. You have Faust getting away with it. She has a really great final shot where she's standing in the middle of the road and Cruz has like a Batman versus the Joker thing.
Yeah, a little standoff type thing where Cruz has already been done away with and she's on the verge of taking off forever.
Yes, which is really cool. So we don't know who she's working for yet exactly. We find out that she's MI6. She goes back to London, gives Attlee, which is this old British man who's played by Snobby McPissyface from Grouchshire. I don't know.
That was his birth name. Yeah.
So she tries to say to him, oh, look, I've done enough now. Take me back in. And he's like, actually.
Simon McBurney is Attlee, by the way, but go ahead.
Simon McPissyface. Snobby. He says to her, actually, you know, the entire world thinks you're a dangerous assassin, and we've let them believe that. So unless you reinfiltrate the syndicate and kill Hunt for them to prove your loyalty to me, you can't come
back. So here's where we're at. MI6 needs to kill Hunt for Rebecca Ferguson to
Hunt needs to kill Peg.
Fair. Alec Baldwin basically wants Hunt dead because he thinks he's a risk to the country.
Yes.
You have those two entities chasing Ethan Hunt, and the only people that Hunt has by his side are right now Benji.
Snobby wants to kill Ferguson because what he does next is he wipes the disc somehow in the brief time he has it before he gives it back
without her knowing. Yes,
without her knowing. So she gives big bad guy Sean Harris a blank disc,
and what this disc is the ledger, and basically, in order for the syndicate to be activated, this ledger needed to be not only taken from this impossible to reach place, but unlocked through these various means that only the Prime Minister can unlock it for, the Prime Minister of England. Mm-hmm. And the ledger would give access to all these different bank accounts to keep the syndicate funded for decades. And they don't have access to these funds unless the Prime Minister opens up this red box, which is what it's called, ledger, which, again, Rebecca Ferguson no longer has access to because Attlee wiped it clean for her. Mm-hmm. The only one out there right now is Tom Cruise's possession because Benji made a copy of it.
Very cool that he did that. He's finally showing his mettle a little bit there, but it just makes things more complicated for Tom Cruise.
What did you want him to do? If he doesn't copy, we don't have a movie.
You think they could check out maybe at some point and just go like hang out in Morocco? Anyway, there's a big ruse where Hunt pretends to be Attlee. And basically, they figure out that only the Prime Minister can unlock this ledger. So they have hours, mere hours, to get this MacGuffin to Sean Harris, who calls them and tells them Faust will be dead or whatever. And
that scene was crucial, too, where Tom Cruise is cosplaying as Attlee with, again, one of the infamous Mission Impossible masks, because it proved to Alec Baldwin, who was in the room at the time, because of a setup through Jeremy Renner's character, that the syndicate is a real thing.
So this big syndicate is real. Alec Baldwin's convinced. Cruz gets the Prime Minister to admit it. That's the key.
Yes.
And the Prime Minister is
although
shot
it wouldn't
with a
be admissible in court because he was under duress because he was tranked. So it doesn't matter. But go ahead.
Correct. They don't deal with the courts.
Of course not. These people are above the law.
Jeremy Renner has shown us that much. Jeremy Renner goes rogue momentarily before he brings Alec Baldwin back.
That would be a good
in.
Angle to have one actual like attorney just along for the ride. You can't do that. Stop doing these things.
Just one of the fake wigs from the Post.
Yes. Yes.
So Luther uncovers what's on the desk. It's money. Yeah. Okay. It's 2.4 billion pounds, which is like $10.5 million.
From a variety of banks.
So the syndicate is basically trying
to. Did you just say $2.4 billion is $10
million? The way that our money is going.
All right. Took me a minute.
Our British fans will laugh at that. Yeah. Hunt destroys the data and says he memorizes it. I don't think he's memorized. He memorizes something to give like Harris a portion of the money.
So it's a chess game. And this is, we're leading into the finale. Benji is taken captive by Solomon Lane. Hunt knows that the only way he's going to get Benji back...
My dog woke up. I lost track.
The only way he's going to get Benji back is if he gives Lane the ledger. What's on the ledger, like we said, is all these bank routing numbers, access to all this money. So instead of giving him the ledger, Hunt, in a very Book of Eli type twist, or Fahrenheit 451 type twist...
Regains leverage.
Memorizes all of the routing numbers and destroys the ledger. So the only ledger, quote unquote, is Tom Cruise himself. So he knows that Solomon needs him alive. So it's basically a one-upsmanship. How can I make Solomon go into my will when Solomon's already expecting me to do this? He's taking Benji, so he has something that he knows is meaningful to me. I need to be one step ahead of him, so I'm going to memorize the ledger. And then it's basically a game of chicken. Do you believe I actually memorized all these codes? If you think you need me, which you do, it's your only option, let Benji go. And very tense scene.
Great scene. It's standoff with the bomb on Benji's chest. Yes. So back in Mission Impossible Rain Man, he's learned how to memorize numbers this quickly. And we have Hunt luring Lane out because he's like, this is going to come down to you and me face to face. Great provocation.
Beautiful scene.
There's a huge knife fight between Faust.
Yeah, they actually give the girl an ass-kicking scene at the end.
The Bone Doctor.
I loved everything about it. Yeah, this script was really good. They righted a lot of the past wrongs that Mission Impossible got wrong previously. Paula Patton didn't get her ass-kicking scene at the end. She got it kind of towards the beginning, and it was kind of shorter than it should have been. Thandi Newton doesn't really get her big ass-kicking scene in 2. We finally get the big, and it is a huge set
piece. In the
finale,
yes.
Yeah, in the finale, a huge knife fight where the woman kicks ass.
All those pillars, I love that scene. The great staging of it.
Yeah, totally.
Awesome fight. We can't want somebody more dead than the Bone Doctor.
Great name, too.
Hunt lures Lane into the grate, like in a crazy chase sequence where he's kind of fumbling and bumbling, backs into it, showing that he's vulnerable. Lane follows him down because it's time for a showdown. All of his goons didn't work. He's got to take matters into his own hands. Lane, Sean Harris there. He jives in, does like a superhero landing on the ground underneath the bank or wherever the hell they are. And then glass ceiling closes. He's stuck in glass. Meet the IMF.
You
great
get the callback to the first scene where Lane had Cruise trapped. Now Cruise has Lane trapped in very similar circumstances. Bring in the nerve gas to this glass enclosure, surrounded by IMF agents. How great was that scene where it's all dark, just the IMF agents, and Lane presses himself against the glass in his last kind of attempt to stare down Tom Cruise? Oh, it was beautiful.
So IMF is restored. The CIA will once again get amnesia about Hunt being right all along and being disavowed for a fourth time and then reincorporated into the very fabric of our nation's security. So, Mike, do we choose to accept the plot?
I thought this was the best script of the series so far.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm happy to accept this plot myself, too.
Yeah, the ending scene, that finale that takes place on the porch or whatever, the patio of that cafe, and it's just this, I know we've said tete-a-tete often, but it's a mano-a-mano type game between Hunt and Lane, who could only communicate through an earpiece on Benji, so Hunt has to talk to his friend who's strapped to a bomb to get to the bat. I thought the emotional layers that it presented was just beautiful. You get your big ass-kicking scene with Rebecca Ferguson at the end, finally, in the fifth installment. It took 20-something years, but it's finally happening. I loved everything about this script.
In The Insider, there's a big speech between Russell Crowe and Al Pacino where he goes, cigarettes are basically a transport system for nicotine. These movies are a transport system for adrenaline and man crushes.
Yes.
I approve of this.
And good callback to The Insider. Great movie.
Yeah, alcohol doesn't have to taste good. So this script doesn't have to work in its entirety, but it's dangerous when alcohol tastes pretty good, when it tastes okay. So when this movie has a pretty good script, we really love
it. Yeah, totally. So, and not enough credit can be made to how these scripts... what franchise has 5 movies and 4 are legitimately above average quality films?
It's rare.
Not only action films, not only genre pieces, but good movies.
4 out of 5. 4 out of 5 were really, really good, and looking like it's going to be 5 out of 6.
Yeah, sure.
So worst scenes, best scenes, Mike, which one do you want to take first?
We could start with best because I already kind of gushed over mine. That entire final sequence, that last half hour of that movie,
that was cool.
I was on the edge of my seat.
Knife fight was awesome. I love the sequence chase through town and through Morocco there.
Beautiful.
That was wild.
Beautiful setting, too.
I love the cinematography and the way they edited that with the close-ups involved with the
motorcycles. I don't know how they got some of those shots.
Loved it.
Because you're following Tom Cruise and Rebecca Ferguson and the bad guys as they're like literally it looked like it was shot on the road.
Yeah.
So they're literally leaning in and out of these turns, and
so cool.
I don't know where the camera is.
Well, that's why you had to have such a large group of goons, because half of them have cameras, or all of them have cameras.
Oh, there you go.
Maybe.
All right.
With the bad guys.
It's there. One bad guy and 7 cameramen.
I like there's one of them who had one line that said something like, "Where's Ethan Hunt?" And I just remember him. That's a cameraman. He's actually just doing his job, and they gave him a line. So I love this movie. I love the opening scene. It's my favorite non-PSH first scene of the series.
Did they do a disservice by bringing in Philip Seymour Hoffman to the third one? Are we just going to compare every bad guy to Philip Seymour Hoffman in MI3?
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to match up, right?
True, true. I don't even know who the bad guy is coming up with.
I don't either, so who knows?
They're playing that one close to the vest. Yeah. I mean, is it Sean Harris again because he's like a prisoner?
I don't know about you. I've gone out of my way to avoid anything about Fallout because I wanted to take these in stride first. So I'm with you. I don't know. But yeah, I love that chase scene. I love the finale. I love some of the dialogue in this one. I thought this was the best laying out of exposition. That phone call at the beginning between Ethan Hunt and Jeremy Renner's character. Mm-hmm. Where Renner's trying to bring him in and Hunt, and because the IMF is disavowed now, and Hunt says, "Never mind, on a whim, you didn't get this call. You don't know where I am. Here's what you tell people. Here's what I'm going to do. I got to go by." I love that. I thought that was a really interesting way to get dialogue and exposition laid out, so you have your setting for the movie.
Right. I really don't have a worse scene. Like, nothing's so poorly done.
I don't.
That I'm
have
upset with
much. I have one thing that's more of a nitpick than anything.
I mean, the underwater stuff bothered me because they're like, oh, by the way, you can't have any masks because we said so. That was like the worst thing for
me. Right,
because you can't have metal in there. Right. Even though the thing is made of metal.
I'm the same way. So when Rebecca Ferguson and Tom Cruise parachute in to the, I don't even know which part this was, when they're starting to get the ledger, so they're parachuting
in. Oh, they shoot the dart at the camera?
Like, yeah. Where are they parachuting from? If Ethan Hunt's disavowed and Rebecca Ferguson has instructions to kill Ethan Hunt, who's giving them a plane to parachute
from?
Well,
she later gets instructions to kill Ethan Hunt, I think, after she brings, because that what they she gets the disc to give to Atlee to wipe, and then so that's the Atlee scene comes later.
Okay,
so she actually just fled, and they
wait a minute, because she's still supposed to be part of the syndicate, as far as everyone knows. So
if
the syndicate's giving her a plane, they're going to know Ethan Hunt's with her.
I don't think that's the syndicate's plane. I think that's, you know.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Whose plane is it?
Simon Pegg orchestrated a plane. And they can get a plane.
Wait, no.
Listen.
Who can give
Ving Rhames can get a plane. Okay?
He's just the man. He's Oz this whole time. Just pulling strings on everyone. I mean, it's a nitpick. It's a total nitpick because it means nothing to the plot. But I just want to know who gave him the plane. But sure,
they're super spies. Somebody can get a plane.
But that's why I was asking, because they got this vibe.
You're not wrong. Right.
But that, yeah, I'm with you. As far as worst scenes, I had that, and I think...
Oh, the Jeremy Renner, Alec Baldwin courtroom scenes, just not funny.
I think
I hated whatever senator was speaking that entire time, because he just like Basil expositioning it. Yeah, I didn't like that.
And my other worst scene was, how many times does Ethan Hunt have to save America before he starts getting a little deference? But yeah, we covered it. So yeah, a lot more good than bad in this movie for me.
Slight preview of Fallout, kind of as we've been doing throughout the episode, where this fits in the entire MIU.
They mention how many times can Ethan Hunt be disavowed and before he turns bad. So now maybe they think he's going to be the bad guy?
Yeah. I'm a little worried about more Alec Baldwin and more Sean Harris in the next movie, to be honest.
I would be worried about everything if it wasn't for the previews and the numbers that I've seen.
Right.
But obviously, they, at least for the most part, for people that have seen it so far, it's taken care of in a great way. So now I'm just curious.
Are they going to even have a heist scene in this coming movie, or is it just going to be like the Raid 2?
What if it's just a 2-hour Henry Cavill mustache fist fight?
Oh my God.
In that bathroom. I'll take it. But
I hope
that
scene goes for 35 minutes.
It has to be the finale, right? That's got to be like the big Rebecca Ferguson knife fight in this one.
It might be a muscle flex scene early. I don't know. Because they're like teaming up and then they're going against each other. I have no idea.
Seems like Cavill is one of the bad guys. It seems like he's, but he doesn't seem like the head honcho.
I just want this to be an endless sequence of fight scenes and chase scenes.
Yeah.
Because I think that's in McQuarrie's wheelhouse. Like, he writes those extremely well, like the motorcycle chase scene. He writes the fight scenes extremely well.
Don't sleep on his script, though. The story for this one I thought was phenomenal. I really did think that it played emotions very well against themselves.
But we've talked about the trailers being worrisome, or that we don't know what this is about, just someone saying nuclear warheads, and we don't know, we don't really care.
That's all I need.
But we rewatched the
Country's
movies.
In trouble? Let's go, Tom!
Yeah. We rewatched the 4 or 5 movies before this.
Do you think he's ashamed?
To figure it out.
He's climbed the tallest building in the world. He's held on to jets that are in flight. He's done all this rock climbing with no nets. And it's jumping from a building to a building ledge that actually hurts him. Right. He's got to have a little shame about that, no? Not that we could do any of those things.
None of those things, none.
But it's jumping that takes him out of action for a couple weeks.
Yeah, he doesn't have the hops that he used to have. But looking at this last movie, especially with that, when he's tied to the pipe and he's handcuffed to the pipe and he kicks himself up over the pipe, which he really does.
This is a 50-year-old man doing these things.
Insane.
Go to the WWE, Tom.
Age is a mindset. Yeah, this is amazing.
I'm 30. I feel 95.
I barely walk down these stairs.
All right, guys, that'll wrap it up for us. Did you like these five movies? Which was your favorite Mission Impossible? Which one do you think the least? I saw someone have a countdown, their official quote-unquote ranking. They put 3 behind 2, and I almost lost my mind last night on Twitter. Wow. I had to restrain myself, so don't do that.
Yeah, we should tease you, too, because we're going to do a re-rank when we record the Fallout pod.
Sure.
We'll also record a little brief, we think brief, we keep saying that, but a brief half-episode, 2 hours, yeah. Re-rank, maybe rank our best action sequences, something like that, screw around.
If you've listened to them this far, you have an idea of, I think you know which one's going to be 6th, but you have an idea of where we've fallen, but we're going to give you that official re-rank in case you want to cherry pick some of these. You don't want to watch them all. We want to have your back for that. Otherwise, I think, I speak for both of us, this is a series that you should be excited to go through. Fallout seems like a movie you should be excited to see, especially if you're an action junkie or a Tom Cruise junkie. We can't wait. Hopefully you guys can't wait. Tell us about it if you can't. Let us know. We're Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on Twitter, Mike, Mike, and Oscar.com, on Reddit, on everything else. Just Mike, Mike, and Oscar. Type in Mike, Mike, and Oscar. You should see us pop up. If you want to give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of those mediums,
please keep those coming. They really help us.
We really appreciate that. Michael, final words of wisdom.
I'm ready for the fallout. That's I'm right. ready to fight the friction.
You're bad, Bruce. I downloaded that song last night.
I heard that song in my head. Like,
I didn't fight the friction!
2 rewatches of Rogue Nation. This is like the same cinematography. It feels the same way.
This is the I should have put this in at the beginning. I have it in my notes, but I own Rogue Nation on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So it's one of those Blu-rays that like looks for previews online. It put on the Fallout preview before I could hit play on this movie. Oh, I watched it, I think, 5 times just yesterday, just with that song part.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
I'm sorry.
It's we're hyped.
Reality sucks, guys. Keep watching movies and figuring out these impossible missions with us, and we'll catch you next time.
See ya.